This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Survivor 48 is here, and after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And here we go on a Friday morning, a fun, feel-good football, whatever you want to call it, Friday on The Fan and CBS Sports Network. Coming to you live from the Built Ford Tubbs studio. It is the Boomer and Geo program, March 14th. Geo is out probably battling the lines at the Disney in about 4 hours from now or so. And so I am back from Indianapolis and sitting in with the Booms on this feel-good Friday. We have got a ton to get to, of course. The NFL, which we'll start things off with. But at some point this morning, the Rangers got a big win over a good team last night on the road. We've got some basketball to get to. I've got a couple of things to talk about college sports. I've got something outside of sports for everybody to get involved with. But most importantly, we start with one former NFL MVP. His name is Boomer Esiason. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Good morning, Jerry. It is a feel-good Friday, and for a lot of reasons for us Ranger fans, last night a huge win. But I'll say this. I wake up this morning. I come in here for the first time, and I want to say maybe 10 years, 12 years. I'm not really sure how long it has been, Al. We have stickers on our microphone stems, which is really kind of special. They have WFAN logos on them now, so if you're watching on CBS Sports, you can see those.
Special.
Very special. It only took like 12 years to get them on here.
So you like it? Doesn't look tacky to you?
You know what? I have to look at it on the monitor. It's definitely
it's a distraction.
It's a distraction.
But it looks good.
I was thinking we should get red sponges instead of these black sponges. What do you think, Al?
I don't know if they make those in multiple colors.
They have to make them in multiple
colors.
Make
the other
one.
What
is this? It's 2025. We're not getting them from Canada.
You see the one that's on CeeLo's microphone? I believe they make those in different colors.
Like this big
round
one?
Yeah, like that big one, yeah.
Let's see. That's a black. So what do you think? You think a red one would work?
I think red or blue.
Or do you think that it is too distracting for the viewer? I'm not sure.
Not sure. I kind of like it.
You do? Eddie thinks it looks hokey.
Eddie, a little tacky, yeah.
Eddie showed me you could buy a variety pack of all different colors online.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
So get on that. What color are you going to get?
Get on that.
I might go green for myself.
I think I'm going to go aqua. Because they have a.
I mean, guys, you got to keep it in the family. I know what the guys did for SNY over there. They had like the Mets colors with the orange sponges.
So I think we got to go red, white, or blue. Those are our
white
colors.
You're not going to want white.
So then it's red or blue.
Schmutz in there and everything. You're not.
That
gonna
is
want
true.
That
no good. That's yet. True. Well, even with red, you'll see the schmutz. Of course you will.
I think maybe I don't know this like natural. What is this? What kind of royal blue is this?
It's a, royal blue.
Like a royal blue.
Yep.
And who wanted this on here anyway?
Mr. The architect.
Oh, he did? That was the big decision he made yesterday? Is that what it is?
Yes. That was about the limit of the budget.
Oh, I see. Okay. But they're nice stickers, though.
This has really got your attention this morning.
I came in there and I said, wow, look at this. I mean,
freshens the place up a little bit.
It does freshen it up a little bit. There's no question about it.
I understand.
So I feel good about that.
Good.
I mean, yeah. All right. So, all right. We're off and running.
We're off and running. Yes. Boomer's attention is on the stickers and we move on. Do you feel good about the Giants? This is what I can't understand just quickly about the Giants because This is NFL all the time around here, and rightly so. And we're actually going to get into a conversation about that later on, too. But, you know, people are annoyed about Aaron Rodgers not making a decision.
Well, I get that. Adam Schefter's annoyed, and I guess everybody else is annoyed with him because he's annoyed.
And I do understand that from the standpoint of it's not like the Jets, you know, said just 3 days ago, we're not bringing you back. He's had time to think about this. I know it's a big decision.
Well, he tried to stay with the Jets. So
I know he did.
The point being, if he tried to stay with the Jets, that means, I think, in his heart, he wants to play.
I do, too. Do you think there's people out there that think he's weighing the decision of playing, not playing, as opposed to where to play?
You know, when you work at a sports talk station, you walk around here and you talk sports with people who work here. And I was talking to Maggie this morning, and Maggie was saying to me that she thought maybe the decision's already been made that he's going to retire. And I said, well, I don't think so, Maggie. I think he wanted to play. And I said last week, if it were 1 year, if he were going to play for 1 year and that was it, then maybe I would consider Minnesota because that seems to make some sense.
They're built to win.
O'Connell, and they're built to win right now, and they refortified their defense. They've had one of the better runs here in free agency this offseason, so it's one of the top five defensive signings, I think, during the season was what they did, and I think that they like, you know, their team right now, and I don't necessarily know that they trust J.J. McCarthy. So maybe just for 1 year, come in kind of like Brett Favre did, go there, and maybe take that team to the playoffs. And I love the fact that it's Kevin O'Connell as his coach. That would be great. But then I was thinking, if he wanted to play 2 more years and he wanted a little bit more money, or not a little bit more, a lot more money, then the place to go would be Pittsburgh, because they don't really have a young quarterback to speak of. Now, they just signed Mason Rudolph.
I saw that. I actually an update on my phone yesterday as I was watching the games at the bar.
That's a backup number that they gave him. It's kind of like what Mac Jones got for San Francisco. Mm-hmm. These are backup numbers. Gardner Minshew just got a backup number, and I think he's going to be, where's he going? Kansas City. So those guys are all in around the $5 to $6 million range. You know, we're still talking about $40 million here, and that is a ton of money, and he still can play. And I saw him yesterday. He was walking on the beach with a blanket around him.
Yes. Became a meme very quickly.
Yeah, and I think he's pondering a little bit as to, you know, does he want to come back to New Jersey? Because he still probably has his house here. And,
sure.
And I think the Giants, and listening to Darius Slayton talk yesterday, you know, I think he felt like, or he feels like they're a quarterback away. So that's the mindset over there for the Giants, just so you know, whether you believe it or not.
Well, they should believe it if they're on the team. I mean, I would like to think so.
But that's what they're saying. But, man, Pittsburgh offers a very unique opportunity. I don't know how good that Cincinnati defense is going to be. I know Baltimore's defense is going to be a pain in the ass, and I know Cleveland's defense is going to be a pain in the ass. But, man, those wide receivers, that could be something.
No question. I guess the question I have for you is, if I were the Giants, and you know, you're looking at, you know, the Giants outside in just like I am, do you think the plan has just shifted week to week? Because for me, I feel like all along it was, we're going to draft a quarterback, and I don't know if they love Sanders. It seemed like they were really attached to Shador Sanders. Then you had whatever is going on with him, and some mock drafts have him falling way down. Others still have the Giants taking him at 3. Do you think the initial plan was, we're going to end up with Shador Sanders, would love to have a veteran quarterback in here to kind of help him along? Because then you find out the Matthew Stafford thing. I feel like, again, outside looking in, it feels like they're just kind of shifting with the wind.
Well,
what they're trying to do.
They have to. I mean, it's fluid. Well, the whole thing is fluid.
They do, but they don't, though, because you're right. It is fluid. But if the plan, if you're really, you know, gung-ho on, we want Shador Sanders, as an example, as our future quarterback, as was rumored. I don't know if that's true or not. Like, why not a Jameis Winston? Like, lock it up now. Only for the standpoint of, you don't expect the kid to play for the first six or seven weeks.
I think they really want to win. They really want to win. And the fallback and the safety valve may be Russell Wilson. It may not excite anybody.
Then why is Joe Flacco in yesterday?
Because, again, Russell Wilson may end up going to Cleveland. The whole thing is fluid. And it really comes down to how much money you want to spend, how much you want to give this guy. What are you telling this guy in terms of your commitment to him is? I mean, I think if they would have signed Matthew Stafford, they would have had a 2-year commitment. They would have passed on the quarterback. And, you know, they would have tried to add one of these great defensive players, or maybe Travis Hunter falls to them. Maybe Mason Graham is somebody that they really like. Maybe Abdul Carter is there, although I don't think he will be. But I just think that under the current set of circumstances with the free agency and with the draft, there's a lot of uncertainty for a lot of teams, and there's probably about 12 to 14 teams that are really settled at quarterback, and maybe about 8 of them that are really happy with their quarterback. The rest of the league has got question marks, and they don't really know what the hell they're going to get out of their quarterback. And that's why I think the Giants are trying so hard to get an established veteran in here. And, like, Joe Flacco may be, like, the last resort.
But does that – all right, so would that signify to you, though, that they are going to draft a quarterback? Because while Joe Flacco had a couple of nice moments in Cleveland, let's be honest, he hasn't been good in years. He hasn't been.
No, I know. And plus, he seems like he's flat. He's like a flatliner.
Correct.
He's not somebody that's going to go walking in there, although he's a very popular teammate, I might say. And look, he's a Super Bowl winner. He's been around. You know, he is the perfect guy, but – like, if he is the perfect guy for a young quarterback to learn from, then why the hell are the Colts going to Daniel Jones?
I have no idea.
Because they don't believe in Anthony Richardson. They don't. They tried to trade him this offseason. So they think that Daniel Jones has got a really good chance of being the starter out there in Indianapolis, and that's why he left Minnesota. So I still think there's three teams involved for, and there may be four, I don't think.
You think a fourth?
Well, not for Aaron Rodgers, but definitely for... Russell Wilson, and that includes Cleveland. So I don't think Minnesota's looking at Russell. Cleveland may be looking at Russell, and I think the Giants are looking at Russell. But again, it's all a fallback waiting on a decision from Aaron Rodgers.
All right, so if you assume Aaron Rodgers goes to Pittsburgh or Minnesota, let's just make that an assumption for now. To me, the one thing I wouldn't want to see happen is the Giants end up drafting, forget Ward. I'm just assuming he's off the board by the time they draft
him. Unless
they move up. Absolutely. So you think if they were one, you think Ward would be the guy?
I think he would definitely be the guy.
Okay, so now let's assume he's off the board, and at three, Shedeur Sanders is sitting there.
No.
You would not take him.
It's not that I wouldn't take him. I don't think they're going to take him.
You don't.
Here's the thing about Shedeur Sanders, and I can only tell you from personal experience. I feel like what's happening to him, for whatever reason, brashness, confidence, aloofness, whatever the negativity surrounding him is, I had that myself. I had to deal with that myself. That was part of the reason why I fell.
Yep.
I mean, it's not the whole reason, but it's one of the reasons why. And because they have my first impression at the combine probably was not great. No matter what my college coach said, who was a pro coach prior to coming to college, Bobby Ross, and no matter how much he and Ralph Regan supported me to all the NFL teams that came into Maryland to talk about me, for some reason they were turned off by me. For whatever reason. I don't know what it is. Maybe I was brash. Maybe I was too cocky. Maybe I was overconfident. And maybe that's what Shedeur is dealing with now. It sounds a lot like what happened to me. That doesn't mean he can't play in the NFL. I proved that I could play in the NFL. So, and I still think he has in his brain the thought that he can handle this because of who his dad is. He's not an explosive player, but that doesn't mean he can't play. Tom Brady was not an explosive player coming out of Michigan.
He did okay.
And he did just fine.
He did all right.
And there's a lot of guys that fall into that category. And it may be a disappointing day for Shedeur, but it also may be a humbling awakening for him.
And you tell me if I'm wrong. I think one of the biggest things for a guy to be successful in the NFL, you need the talent. You have to be able to play the position. But to me, it's the headspace. You've got to be able to handle it. And how would he not be able to handle
it? That's what I'm saying. That's the thing that I think that he does have. And I always go back to when we had Patrick Mahomes in here. Patrick Mahomes just blew me away. Just with this whole presence. And you could just feel it. You could see it. And there was a difference because we had Deshaun Watson in here too. And they were two completely different people. And I wasn't sold on Deshaun, even though he went on to have a good start to his young career. I wasn't nearly as sold on him as I was Patrick, just simply because Patrick seemed to be more mature, expected to win, expected that he was going to be a success at the next level. And thankfully for him, he was drafted in a good environment. You know, so was Deshaun Watson originally with Bill O'Brien.
Sure.
And he had initial success with DeAndre Hopkins and all those guys down there in Houston. Vrabel was on that staff. They had a really good staff. They had things going in the right direction, and all of a sudden, you know, things fell off the rails for whatever reason, whether it be Bill O'Brien's fault, whether it be the owner's fault, whether it be the GM's fault, whether it be Deshaun Watson's fault. They all had a hand in the demise of the Houston Texans prior to DeMeco Ryans getting there. So I just think that I don't know if this is the right environment for a guy like Shedeur Sanders at the current state of the Giants?
Maybe, but I look at the Giants as a team that if they don't end up taking a quarterback in the first round, or I guess maybe even the second round, and maybe that's their plan, I don't know.
Which is fine, I would not have a problem with that.
Especially if you have conviction over the kid you're drafting and you think he can play at this level.
Especially if it's like a Jackson Dart, or maybe it's a Kyle McCord, or maybe it's one of these, a Jalen Milrow. It could be any of those guys, but I just don't think... If it's not Cam Ward at the top of this draft, then I think they either trade out,
okay,
or they get a bona fide, should-be rookie starter at a very important position, either defensive back, defensive tackle, or offensive tackle.
Here's my question then. Then if Aaron Rodgers isn't coming here, and I do think most people don't think he's coming here.
Then it's going to be Russell Wilson.
But you also just said you could be in the bidding for Wilson if you got other teams that want him. Like the Giants could be a team that's sitting at the altar with no quarterback.
I understand that. Or Joe Flacco.
Which is no quarterback at this point. I mean, yes, he could start for the first 5-6 games for sure and then hand things over to the quarterback. But if you're telling me that they don't like Shedeur Sanders, and maybe they go for a kid in the second round, maybe that's the guy. I feel like they've made moves defensively to get better this year or this offseason.
Right.
Compete with the Eagles and Commanders, I have no idea. But I feel like they'll be a better football team. I think with Andrew Thomas healthy, you know, you can say all you want about the line. The first 8 games of last season, they were pretty damn good up front. And if they're healthy, they should be. It's the one piece they're missing. And to me, I would think the veteran quarterback, whether it's Russell Wilson, whoever it might be, even a Jameis Winston who can at least play the position a little bit, knowing he's not your quarterback for the full year, it allows you to draft the kid, sit the first 8 weeks, and then almost like Eli Manning and Kurt Warner.
You're right, I know that. But they also have to be careful about what they're telling these quarterbacks and their agents when they come in, because they don't want to tell them their draft plans because they don't want the rest of the league to know who they're thinking about drafting. Think about that
for
a second.
Yeah, no, I get that because that'll get out immediately.
Right, so they're sitting down with Russell Wilson today or you know, saying to him, hey, look, you know, we want you here for a year because we are drafting one of these young quarterbacks. They're not going to tell him that.
I wouldn't think
so. They can't tell him that.
The other thing, too, is the idea of I've been on this for a long time. I'm not going to sit here and claim that I watch Sanders play more than a game or two at most.
I watched a lot of his games.
What I do know is... You know, 75% completion percentage.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of touchdowns.
College football is completely different.
I know it is.
NFL.
I know. But I do think there's something about him that I think would excite a fan base and lend hope to a fan base that's been longing for another guy since Eli got old.
You know, he dominated at the HBCU that he played at. And he played much above average at Colorado.
He played great at Colorado.
But when I watch the games, there's a lot. He's standing back there for 5 or 6 seconds.
Understood. I know you got to get rid of the ball.
And I know people are saying, oh, he didn't have this great offensive line. I'm like, you know, I didn't see him, you know, a lot of times dropping back and just letting it fly. I saw a lot of, like, you know, behind the line of the scrimmage stuff, move around, you know, the college football field because of the hash marks.
But isn't that part of the NFL game, though, now, too? It's not just 1985 where you drop back and throw.
This throw here that CBS Sports Network is throwing is right in the face of a blitz, and it's a great throw. It's right. It's on the money. It's a little bit behind the receiver, but it's a completion. And the beauty of it is that he stood in there and he showed that he can take a hit and deliver the football. So that's a very important part. You know, then you have this other thing going on right now, and this is Lewis Riddick out there kind of debunking all of this negativity that's coming Shador's way. And I would expect Lewis Riddick to do that. Why would I expect him to do that? Because he's great friends with Deion Sanders. And Deion Sanders told the Jets, if you don't hire this guy as your next GM, you know, there's something wrong with you. If you remember that.
I do remember
so
that.
So there's... I hate that when crap like this happens to players, but this is a part of the process that they have to go through. So maybe it could be a little bit of humble pie that Shedeur is eating, but I still think he's going to go in the first round. I just don't know where, and I don't think at number 3, unless the Giants are desperate and they don't get one of these guys that they feel like could lead their team at least to a competitive level.
Who was the former Giants quarterback that was at Colorado? Not quarterback, a coach that was at Colorado. I'm blanking out on his name. He got run out of here.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, he is... Right, thank you. Of all people, Al, appreciate that.
I didn't say it on there.
Pat Shurmur.
Yes, Pat Shurmur, that's right.
He has come out and said he's NFL ready. Now, I don't know if that's, again, because he's on the staff and he's friends with Deion, but I remember hearing that and thinking, you know what, this is the guy.
Because they ran an NFL offense, and I think this is one of the reasons why Deion hired Pat Shurmur. was for his son.
To get NFL ready.
Now, the other wild card in all of this, and it's written all over the place, and you can do with it what you want, and you can say whatever you want about it.
Is?
The Deion factor.
Okay.
All right, does a team want to deal with the Deion factor? And what is the Deion factor?
I don't know. He's staying in Colorado, so he's not going to be hanging around.
But I mean, like, everybody's going to be running, especially if he comes here to New York.
Well, if they
People
don't have
to be running to him for, you know, that, for comments and everything else.
And the idea that if they don't have a good season, you know, the coach is on the hot seat, who could be the coach in waiting? That is part of that, too.
It's not going to be Deion here, but I'm just saying, like, to me, like, that is a part of this process. Whether you like it or not, it is a part of the process that Deion Sanders is a huge personality.
No doubt. And the Giants need to figure out a way to win, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's not. We will find out.
It is a real conundrum, Jerry.
It's a conundrum. Yes, it is. With the draft now, March from about 6 weeks away or so, and we will get some answers. All right, we'll take our first break.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Sometimes the conversations during the breaks are better than the ones after the breaks, but you never know. 6:28, it is the Boomer and Geo program. It is a feel-good football. I feel like it's Football Friday basically every Friday of the year these days. Now we'll get to that at some point later.
Football Friday. What about
feel-good
baseball?
Football? Well,
what about hockey?
Do you realize, and we'll get to that too, but do you realize opening day is literally, now we're less than 2 weeks away for our teams, but you got two games in Japan.
Yes.
Coming up, I think next week, actually.
Dodgers and
Cubs, I believe.
Cubs. Yes,
I'm pretty sure. I remember we were sitting here last year watching, I think it was the Dodgers last year, too, with Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, now you got Yamamoto and Sasaki that are going
to... I would say...
look at Al's face.
Yeah, but he didn't care. He didn't even know
what's
happening.
Next week?
What? You kidding me?
What's baseball?
You know, with baseball losing their contract with ESPN,
yeah,
they better do some international stuff.
I agree.
They better get some.
I was reading
some fun somewhere.
I was reading Fox wants to jump in more again. Oh, I don't know if they are or they're not, but that was one thing I did read
Fox
the other day.
Sports one,
maybe with FS1. Who knows? We shall see.
And 2 weeks from today, it will be a Football Friday. The UFL kicks off.
Oh. Okay. 6:29. Here is Chris. I love football, but I can't. Chris Lopresti, good morning.
Good morning. Brought to you by Roto-Rooter. Leave plumbing to the pros. Ball injury stuff out of the way. More of it. Shocker. Jeff McNeil's got a right. The obliques, man. Enough with the obliques.
I know.
God.
Didn't I hear him say it doesn't even feel like much?
Yeah. But he's going to miss.
But he's going to be out, a month?
Well, 7 to 10
Lord.
Days of no baseball activities, God. And they're projecting that'll cost him about 3 to 4 weeks.
He could lose his spot.
He could, yeah.
He could lose
his
spot.
Acuna,
yeah.
See what happens. So, in good news for the Mets, though, Brandon Nimmo was back in the lineup for the first time in nearly 2 weeks. He had that right knee soreness. He went 1-for-3 yesterday, and Sean Manaea received clean MRI results on his oblique strain. So, he has resumed his throwing progression.
I don't know. What, do these guys do anything during the offseason? They have to be working out.
Yeah.
They have to be doing something.
I'm sure they are.
Think that this kind of stuff is... The rash of injuries for both the Mets and the Yankees, it's getting ridiculous.
No, it's beyond ridiculous and has been for years now.
As far as the Yankees are concerned, they had to clarify on Gerrit Cole's surgery after initial word suggested that he had just the internal brace procedure, so there was some hope for a shorter recovery. Not the case, though. That was internal brace in addition to the reconstruction.
Yeah, so the whole thing was
the full
torn.
Monty, yes.
That'd be totally torn, and he knew it as soon as he did it.
So that's going to be quite a while, probably bleeding into next season, but that remains to be seen down the road. And Giancarlo Stanton, who, of course, is dealing with the double elbow situation. Well, John Heyman reports he's also got a chronic calf issue.
Is that from walking to
the car? We've known.
What is going on?
He's had calf problems for years now, but yeah.
I know that the Mets gave Juan Soto this 14 or 15-year contract, which is ridiculous, but I mean, you start paying these guys over 30, these long-term when are they going to learn?
Well, I will tell you, if you're a Met fan, I've said this and people have criticized me for saying it, but I do believe it. Best case scenario for the Mets is you win a World Series or two in these first 5 years and he opts out. And someone else gives him a monster contract, only from the standpoint of these contracts don't age well the last 5-6 years.
You know, it was interesting that you remember when A-Rod opted out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and opted back in during the World Series, I believe.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
The Yankees probably should have said, okay, see you later. And the same thing
kind
can
of
be
Cole.
Same thing can be said for Gerrit Cole. It's unfortunate, but when you give guys this amount of money and you give them the option to opt out, and they do, you got to say, okay, you know, that's
which
that's
the opt out for the player is nothing good for the team. It never is. They perform the way you are paying them to perform. They opt out for more money. They suck. I'm good. And you can keep paying me all this money.
Right, but it's the thing that hooks the player into signing with you.
Yeah,
maybe stinks. Another team wouldn't do that.
Right.
And or give an extra year like they did to Max Fried.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's, you're playing with fire with these pitchers. You just really are. And that's why I do like what David Stearns is doing. You know, short-term contracts, maybe try to rebound some guys after
buy low.
Injury.
Yeah.
Buy low,
yeah.
Hopefully get a great performance and, you know, maybe then add a pitcher of significance at the trade deadline at that point, and then you try to bolster your team that way.
Oh, but, just to, sorry.
Go yeah, ahead. I'm just saying, it's just like giving long-term contracts to guys in their late 30s, and now they can't take HGH and they can't take, steroids.
Yeah. Well, to circle back and finish up on the Heyman report on Stanton, he heard that an optimistic return date would be Memorial Day. So I guess that's best case scenario at this point.
For Stanton?
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to see him until ever.
Okay.
So,
well,
that fine.
Great. All right. Yankees-Phillies tonight here on The Fan. So you get the first broadcast with Dave Sims
nice.
And Susan Waldman. You got coverage at 6:30.
You know what's so funny about? So Dave Sims, they were running.
Oh, where did I see it? God, was it?
Might have been Feinstein. No, it might have been the History of St. John's. I saw something. That's what it was. It was a 30 for 30 on, oh my God, the former Felipe Lopez. The former St. John's freshman superstar,
yes.
And then he had a tough sophomore season. So they're running all of this footage, and it made me think of it because I heard Al railing on, you know, older broadcasters this morning. Right? What was it?
Get out!
I think is what you said this morning.
He was railing on a lot of things this morning.
I've realized what Al is now.
A pain in the ass.
Well, I don't know. And I don't, this is not a knocker or nothing, but I think this is the reality of the situation. You can tell me if you think I'm wrong. I think I told you this the other day. Al, to me, has become the bully home team. You're walking into a very tough environment, and if you can withstand the first 5 minutes of that team, you can then get to them later.
It's like it's an onslaught. Like
it's an onslaught to get started.
For 5 minutes because he's got a lot of stuff.
And then
to
he kind of comes
swinging.
Down, and by the end, it's fun out. But those first 10 minutes, he's brutal.
He's got a lot to get off his chest.
Yeah, and what happens is I come in a very good mood, and then I get all the topics together, and then I go, let's see what's going on Twitter.
And then he gets fired up again.
Furious.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like every first segment I label, Al is angry, ..
Yeah. Pretty much.
And this morning it was Joe Flacco.
Yes.
And I think if the Giants signed Joe Flacco it might break him.
So my point was, talking about the older broadcasters.
Dave Sims.
Dave Sims was sitting there with an MSG microphone. This has got to be, how many, 30 years ago, and now he's starting with the Yankees.
Well, wasn't he here close to the start or at the start?
Yes, but I'm just saying, just seeing a young Dave Sims was like, and now he's starting a new career with the Yankees at the young, ripe old age of, what, I don't even know what he is, 65, 70?
Sure.
And I don't
even good
know.
That he wasn't still with the Mariners. You saw that Rick Riz got...
I did.
Took a foul ball to the head the other day on the broadcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
The poor guy sitting next to him.
Yeah, Dave Sims is 72 years old.
Is he seven? Good for him. He looks great.
Yeah.
He does look great, so he's got to be very excited. We'll hear him. But yes, I did see the Rick Riz thing.
Yes.
And also, didn't they say it went like through the window wasn't open?
Right, it was a small, it was like a, you know, one in a million shot type deal.
You did baseball. Would you sit there with a glove? I got to be honest. I think I might.
Yeah.
I mean, John Sterling, now Rick Riz. Yeah. I'm sure it's happened before where there have been a lot of near misses, too.
Yeah, it's not as safe as you might imagine. Anyway, Al was all worked up about Joe Flacco this morning on the warm-up show. Can't understand how he still draws interest at this stage of his career. I kept saying, I wish Boomer was here to explain to Al, because he's like, we got hundreds of colleges and football programs, but we can't get 32 competent starting quarterbacks. Like,
it's
what's
hard.
The deal?
It's a really hard deal, and that's why guys like Joe can still hang around. I mean, they can go out there and do it. There's not going to be 17 weeks of it, and you're not going to be happy with it.
But if we had hundreds of dental schools, and when they came out of school, they couldn't be dentists, wouldn't we go, these colleges are failing us? These colleges are failing the NFL. They are. They're producing terrible quarterbacks.
It is a different game.
I don't think you realize how hard it is.
Right.
That's the thing. You can't even comprehend. And by the way, you were the quarterback of your flag football team.
And he's throwing picks to chicks.
For about two games, and you almost had a mental breakdown.
Right. Because we've complicated the position, which is why no one can do it anymore.
He doesn't calls are too long.
Right. I will say, I will agree with you 100%. When you listen to John Gruden and he tries to explain a play to the guys at Barstool, imagine teaching a 21-year-old coming out of college who came from a college offense, you know, some, you know, 23-word play, which is insane. Like, I want my quarterback to be able to play with a, like, not a tied-up brain. So you can't give him 50 different things that are going on the...
So then you agree with him.
You are right about that. There's the, and that's always been a big bugaboo for me. Not every team is that way. Some guys are worse than others because they feel like they have to tell everybody what to do, when in fact you really don't have to tell everybody what to do. If you just give a concept, and then if you want to change a route on a particular play, you could do that. But you got to teach concepts first, and then you could start adding to the playbook by spreading things out and adding words. But you can't do it to like a 21-year-old kid coming out of college. You're asking for failure.
The NFL might be failing them more so than failing the NFL.
That's what I think. And I'm thinking about Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels.
Yeah.
And I was thinking also about Bobby Slowick and C.J. Stroud his first year. I couldn't believe Bobby Slowick ended up getting fired last year. Mm-hmm. But when you're dealing with these young kids, you want to find out what they can do best, and then you want to try to accentuate that. But you want to try to keep it as mentally, I guess, untaxing. You just don't want to tax them overall of it because they got to read defenses.
They'll be thinking too much.
And they've made it easier for the players now because they can hear them in the ears. Then coach can talk to them before the play and tell them the play, so they don't really have to know everything, which I think is really a negative for the quarterback. But yeah, they've made it way too complicated, and that's one of the reasons why guys like Joe Flacco and Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers can continue to play into their 40s.
I'm sure at some point we ask you this question over the last 16, 17 years.
Yeah.
But did you ever go into a huddle and draw up a play in the dirt? Like, you didn't like what came in, and you said to your wide receivers,
"Oh yeah,
screw it, we're going to do this."
Well, yeah, 1995 under Richie Kotite, this size was doing it the whole freaking game.
For real?
Yeah, because... Unfortunately, that was like one of the first couple of years where we had the coach, the quarterback communication device. And Richie had that device on his hip. And he didn't realize that he had to hold the button down initially. So I was hearing every third word like, I'm like, what the F are we doing here? And so I would just end up calling my own plays early on. And it was a little bit of a tension between the two of us.
Shocker. A little bit of a battle.
And I was like, hey, man, got to hold that button down. So you got to hold it down.
I'm not a genius.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Boy, tough times.
Oh, it was tough times. Funny. You know, and sometimes the wrong personnel come in and the wrong play didn't coincide with the personnel you have, and you got to clean that stuff up, and young quarterbacks aren't ready to do that yet.
And you had 30 seconds to figure it out.
And wasn't there a story about it rained on his two-point chart? So he didn't know.
And the ink brand.
What do we do? I guess we didn't laminate it. It's important to do lamination at that point. You know what I mean?
I think how stupid that is. You're going out into the rain with paper. Like, that's not going to go well.
I do remember one situation. We were playing the Jacksonville Jaguars that year, and I think it was either... week two.
Something like that. First season?
The Peyton Manning Bowl, we called it in the pregame.
What's that?
In the pregame, the Jets pregame, because I was part of the crew there. Dave Jennings called it the Peyton Manning Bowl.
Oh, for tanking. Peyton
for next year.
Yeah,
but, you know, Jacksonville had Mark Brunell.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was a rookie. They had Tom Coughlin. It was their first year. And I think it was game two of that year. And I think you can look back, and I'm sure somebody will find it.
What season is this now?
1995. So we got killed by the Dolphins in week one. Just killed. I mean, murdered. I mean, we had guys. I was calling motion, and the word that we would use for motion was dumb, D-U-M. And twice on successive plays, Wayne Corbett forgot to come in motion, so I had to yell dumb motion to him. Dumb motion, dumb motion. And then the next play, Kyle Brady, who was a rookie out of Penn State, I had to give him dumb motion, but he was in a four-point stance for some reason. I don't know really why. And then I had to tell Cal Dixon, my center, don't snap the ball. I got to tell Brady dumb motion. And then Brian Cox was the middle linebacker of the Miami Dolphins. He'd lean over. He goes, you guys are the dumbest sons of bitches I've ever seen. I'm like, you have no idea. So we ended up getting murdered by
52-14,
them. 52-14. Wow. Right. Yeah, I know. So now the next week, I think we're playing Jacksonville.
Week three. Eddie was correct.
What was it?
Week three.
It was week three, okay.
Why he sickly remembers that is a
I don't know, but I know it was Jacksonville, and it was their first season. And we start the first series, and this thing's happening with the quarterback, the communication device. My God, damn it. I couldn't take it anymore. And finally, I called plays, and I believe we went down the field, and we scored a touchdown, which was like a remarkable. It was a remarkable accomplishment, and we were all so happy. And I came over to the sideline. Richie wasn't happy with me.
Because you weren't running the plays he was trying to give you.
Because I wasn't running the plays that he was calling. And he is right. I mean, he's, you know, you got to respect the head coach. There's no question about it. But I just got so frustrated. I just called the plays. And I remember just standing there with him and knowing that I was not going to be his quarterback of the future. We just didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things. And I looked at him and he's kind of yelling at me on the sideline after scoring a touchdown. And I was standing there knowing that the cameras are on us. And I was smiling. Going, okay, that's great. That's really good. Keep your finger on the goddamn button. And if you don't keep your finger on the button, I can't call the plays. Okay, is that okay?
And you're still smiling through it.
Because if I'm not smiling, then niggas go, oh, there's tension between the head coach and the quarterback.
You do that very well years later.
Yes, I know. But that's, I tell the story every now and again, but that was a true story, and I knew that was so frustrating. Yeah. Did we win that?
I was going to say, Boomer calls his own plays. They win 27-10, and you were 27-43 for 296 and 3 touchdowns.
Oh, God.
There you go.
That was amazing.
Yeah. We're having flashbacks. You want to give me one Minko before you get out of here?
Yes.
Give me one Minko.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's about the only Minko we have for some reason.
Really?
Got the final call in
they
there.
They were winning 8. What? That's all we have is the final call? They were winning 18-3 and killing them early.
Why would you want to call it?
Jerry,
unless it's close, like we had you the other day.
We used to run the highlights.
In overtime.
Oh, we had all like the crap. Rutgers highlights.
But, you did? Oh, really?
Yeah.
We
and
have.
You sounded bad. You sound like you're really upset.
I was upset. I didn't think I sounded bad, but yeah, I was disappointed. I wanted to see them win, of course.
Why wouldn't he be?
No, I know it
they
just
had
sounded
a, they had
like
a lead.
So negative.
Right at
I
the
was
end.
Not negative.
You were so negative.
No, I wasn't negative. The comeback they had, we were into it. They were down 15.
Yeah, but
they
then
come storming back.
In overtime. He didn't have a chance.
Well,
no,
in the second overtime.
First of all, they had an opportunity to win at the end of regulation.
Which I played for you. Yeah.
They had an opportunity to win at the end of overtime. Yeah. And then when they hit back-to-back threes and they got down 6-8, it was like, uh-oh. And they looked, like Dylan Harper looked gassed at that point. Yeah, I mean, it takes a little bit of wind out of yourself. When you kind of realize, I don't know if they're going to be able to come back again.
No, I listening to you as you reflected the negativity of the game at that point.
When did I?
Did a good job.
I did not reflect negativity at all. I was very into this game. That play was sick.
AG
hands it off to Yates. 4 to shoot. Yates into a long three. Good. It's 89-83.
Couple of big hoops here for USC. I'm doing a game. I am doing a game for what I believe is the Rutgers fans.
Correct.
Do you want me to get fired up over that?
No. I just felt
that's
like
it was deflating.
Yeah, you did a good job of bringing the negativity to the moment.
You suck. All right. Well, next hour.
That's a professional.
Okay.
A basket with BT in there.
Okay.
We have the final call, and then there's the full 1 hour and 22-minute broadcast.
The whole thing's in there?
Yeah. So someone basically said, you go ahead and find whatever highlights you want.
All right, we got to go. So next hour.
Patino had all kinds of fun during the game, after the game. So,
UConn St. John's and Marquette today at 6:30.
Right.
I got Maryland and Illinois at 6:30.
The Big Ten's got 4 games. Seven of those 8 teams are ranked, and UCLA should be ranked. So it's good, a heck of a day for the Big Ten. Maryland's got a big game. I'll take a quick break. Yes.
Rangers Devils won as well.
Yes.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, 6:53. It is the Boomer and Geo program on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. A lot with the football. Let's wrap up the football for this hour just quickly, and then I'll get to my other story maybe next hour. So a couple things that we kind of hit on as we were going through the hour, and we mentioned Daniel Jones to Indianapolis. He had his introductory press conference yesterday. So because of the way the charter worked coming back from the Big Ten tournament, I spent the entire day in Indianapolis yesterday. So at one point, kind of flipping through the channels, I will tell you, it seemed like they were kind of excited to have Daniel Jones in as they were playing snippets from his press conference. And I mean, I don't know. I know they're not thrilled with Anthony Richardson, but it's funny to me. This is what struck me. In New York, in this area, I think a lot of people couldn't wait to get him the hell out of here. And yet they were very welcoming and receiving of him as if, like, we've got our guy. And I know it's a one-year deal, but excited to have him.
Yeah, you know, I kind of went through a little bit of what Daniel went through, you know, you go to a third team and you're like, okay, you're going to be a part of the team. And, you know, there's an initial excitement when you get signed. And then the reality hits when the games start. And is he going to be familiar with that team? And that team, you know, they wanted to get younger, and they also wanted an athletic quarterback to kind of match exactly what Anthony Richardson is. They want that same type of offense. And that's the offense that Shane Steichen runs out there. Remember, he was with Philadelphia with Jalen Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, it's a good opportunity for Daniel. That's what I'll say. And they have a decent team. They don't have a great team, but they have a good team. And that's the AFC South. So, you know, you got to deal with Houston. Houston's probably taking a little bit of a step back from where they were 2 years ago, just simply due to injury and attrition. But yeah, he's got a good opportunity to win a starting job, and that's what they told him. If you come here, we'll give you a legitimate opportunity to try to beat out Anthony Richardson, because I don't think that they think that Anthony Richardson is mature enough to handle being quarterback in the NFL just yet.
Fair enough. All right, then the other thing is, NFL wise, we'll wrap it up, is inbounds, out of bounds. So I know around here, Gio loves scuttlebutt. I know Al loves when we have shows battling against one another. It's kind of fun. It gives you a little bit of flair for what's going on. So this isn't necessarily within the organization, but pretty damn close. So DeMarcus Lawrence goes to Seattle.
Yep.
I'm sure you saw the one-on-one. If you didn't, I will be happy to tell you about it. He's having the conversation, basically, why'd you sign in Seattle? And he goes on, and I'm paraphrasing. I'm sure CeeLo will play the sound at some point this morning. I'm paraphrasing when he says, DeMarcus Lawrence basically says, Dallas is my home, love it there, blah, 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 blah. But I sure ain't winning a Super Bowl. They ain't winning a Super Bowl in Dallas. To where, who do you think would like to react to that?
Micah Parsons.
Yes.
Yes.
So my question would be, DeMarcus Lawrence, his name is going to go up in the Ring of Honor at one point. His number, I mean, he was a great Cowboy. He has not been the same the last couple of years. He's aged. I get it. And quite frankly, what the Seahawks gave him, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. But hey, good for him. Why? Why would you go down that route? Are you just bitter?
Yeah, I think he's bitter.
Because
the Dallas Cowboys wouldn't meet what Seattle gave him.
But he made a fortune from the Cowboys.
Doesn't matter. I mean, at the end of the day, it really comes down to a respect thing. And in your mind, like, if the Seattle Seahawks are going to give me as much money as they gave me, and they guaranteed me as much money as they're going to guarantee me, and Dallas said, well, we can't meet that, then you are now being told by the team that you've played your entire career for that you're no longer wanted, nor do they think you're good enough to give you that kind of money.
But aren't you now throwing shade at who were you, just your friends 5 minutes ago, and your teammates?
Yeah, but they don't think that. I mean, it's all raw emotion. It's raw emotion. It's money. It's and it's disappointment. Like, he doesn't want to look as if he's leaving Dallas as a failure.
He's not, though. I mean, he didn't win a Super Bowl. I get it, but he had a Hall of Fame career there.
I'm not a psychologist, but you know, I understand why he would possibly take a shot at the Dallas Cowboys, because he felt like he was worth it. And I also think that he probably thinks that, you know, they're saving money for Micah Parsons.
Well, they have to, for
and,
sure.
And it's good, and it cost him his job to be there in Dallas. So, I mean, it's just a natural.
Yeah, I think
it's, and they're paying Dak Prescott $60 million, and they're paying CeeDee Lamb.
Yep.
I mean, so they're paying a lot of guys, and he probably felt like he was one of those guys, should have been one of those guys,
and he was for a decade.
Yeah, but if Seattle's going to give him that money, then he's going to say, "I'm taking it," because I know Dallas is not going to match it.
I'm not arguing that point. He should take it. It's more money, good for him. I just didn't think he needed to throw those jabs at your team.
Jerry, you know, they are human beings.
I know sometimes we don't think that, but they do have
an emotional aspect to who they are, and the respect factor is what is probably was fueling this.